30365.
And now the third in a series of programmes called simply Things, presented by John Dredge. Programme 3, Classical Music.
Hello there, Like. Tonight we look at the dangers of classical music. What is it? What isn't it? What might it be if removed from the concert hall and placed on a slab? And how much of it is there to go round? We talked to classical music expert Rotter Johnson Brown about the shortage of classical music, what can be done about this, and whenceforth the answer resides. Also, we'll be asking, did classical music really come from the sea? Where is it going, and when, with whom, and whence, which, and what would happen if it fell on you? We'll be talking to the viola player who refuses to play quavers, claiming physical difficulties. There's a feature on the history of carpets in classical music, from Mozart's Carpet Requiem to Beethoven's little-known Concerto in B minor for carpet tiles and sundry assorted floor mats. Thomas Thespule is here with his own very unusual rendition of the third act of Verdi's lost opera, Shovels. And for people who like playing music in Arctic conditions, Horace Nodes advises you on which igloos have the best acoustics. Bob Bobson will be discussing Beethoven's influence on Whizzer and Chips, focusing on Shiner and the issue in which he wrote a madrigal which was later confiscated by his parents, unable to cope with the sheer scope of Shiner's work. But now, here are the answers to the quiz from the last programme, which was, of course, all about tea, and not about squirrels, as claimed by one listener who has since been destroyed. Thanks to you, the listeners, for sending in your correct entries, although why Mrs. Mueller sent us an artichoke, we're not entirely sure. We'll be sending her a lettuce, which will hopefully add to her confusion and ensure an early retirement. Anyway, as they say, enough of this pre-quiz answer shilly-shallying and on to the nub of the gist of the answers. Question one was too long and complex to go into now, but the answer was just as complex, so they cancel each other out. That was a trick question. Very few of you got that one completely right, although Mr. Mulligan scored about 3.5. Question two. In 1954, Donald Munkhausen drank a particularly strong cup of tea, resulting in an eyebrow problem. What was the exact nature of this facial calamity? Well, of course, the tea was so strong that the fumes lacerated his left eyebrow, causing a slight tremor, and this later led to undiagnosed tea phobia. Donald never went out of the house again, unless accompanied by an assistant with a large net to ward off those whom he thought might come at him with a teapot. A rather complicated answer there, but several of you got it right. Three of you got it half right, and one of you got it 5/8 right, while 10 of you managed to attain a 5-point bonus, resulting in a percentage and an additional 9.5 bits. Question 2. How many tea cakes can be arranged into the sign of the cross? Well, the correct answer is 15. Any more than 15, and it resembles the shape of a large wheelbarrow, as demonstrated by Tony Hart in 1975-67. Question 3 was really difficult, but the answer itself was easy. Question 4. Have tea bags ever caused a major accident, and are they affected by the congestion charge? Well, yes, tea bags have been the cause of several major road accidents, including one in which a man collided with a tea bag and became covered with grit. He has written a thesis on the accident, which has been made into a large and rather ornate paper hat. The congestion charge part of the question was not relevant and has now been sent to our irrelevancy department in Stonehenge. Question 4. The answer was umbongo. For a detailed description of this answer, please see page 4 of the Radio Times, which can be found in an alternative dimension at longitude 32, or simply listen to the shipping forecast backwards, and this will give you all the extra information regarding this particular answer. The rest of the information about this answer is already in your brain and can be located using mind control. The answer to question 5, 1954, was the year concerned, and not as some of you believed, 1998, which was of course the year in which a tea-based nuclear test was carried out. But the force of the blast was negligible, and the resulting radiation merely led to 90% of the population putting the kettle on. This led to an overload in the national grid, a problem with the local grid, and slight abrasion to all other grids in the area. Grid consultants were called out, and the whole grid scare led to a popular magazine, What Grid, which was later incorporated into Whoopi comic with low-key results. And finally, the answer to question 6. Ted Beastly won the Olympics in 1965 with a teapot strapped to his head. He later did a lap of honour while banging a big gong which was pulled alongside him on a sort of cart. But few people ever found out why. If you know why, please write to the Society for Cart-Based Problems in West Duncastle. Well, thank you to the people who wrote in with the answers, although some of you wrote in with the questions, which suggests an unwillingness to confront your insecurities. This letter from Mrs. Monkton says, I have written in with the questions because I do not like to analyse things too deeply, as you never know where it may lead. I merely accept the status quo. Well, Mrs. Monkton, despite your gracious letter, we have recommended you to a special clinic, which offers no real way out. Thanks all the same, yet no thanks. Now it's on with this week's subject of classical music. And with us in the studio to discuss it are a conductor with a baton in the shape of a bean, for vegetarian musicians, and the mass bands of the Highland Artillery, who will be playing an unusual arrangement of the Ace of Spades. Let's start with a brief history of classical music. In 1706, Jeremy Sogers took a collection of notes, staves, and instruments, put them all together into a blender, and a chain reaction led to the invention of classical music. Then Beethoven came along in a wheelbarrow pushed by his friend Mozart. They lived next door to the laboratory and both began to write concertos because they were bored with life. They later went on to become adults and wrote lots of notes, which later went on to be played by human beings. In 1893, Schubert emerged from a hole in the ground. It is a little-known fact that he lived underground, as he was distrustful of daylight, claiming it caused a painful rash. And as a result, he had begun work on a series of underground tunnels, in which he composed many of his least-known works. On hearing Beethoven's Fifth, he ventured above ground, and was inspired to write a new composition entitled On Leaping Out of the Ground, later retitled Schubert's Finished Symphony. Beethoven, meanwhile, had just written Symphony No. 5, which was annoying for him, as he then had to go back and write the first four. He missed out Symphony No. 6 completely, as he said the number bugged him. And the Seventh Symphony was only 2 seconds long, due to a shortage of music paper. His Eighth Concerto was written specially for people who could play upside down, but as no one could be found with these skills, the concerto was destroyed in a controlled explosion by the Anti-Upside-Down Music Authority, who found this sort of symphony far too inverted for their liking. By this time, Schubert had returned to his underground network of tunnels and was never seen again, although he occasionally posted concertos to Mozart, who played them on a set of bagpipes due to a slight Scottish bent he had contracted in Edinburgh. Many other people wrote classical music until 1967, when it ran out. A new form of classical music was created later in a laboratory in Peckham, although the low quality of the chemicals used resulted in a lower quality of music, and it was subsequently banned by the council and replaced by a car park. Since then, classical music has been rediscovered. Remnants were found under a bench in Hyde Park, and the remains of an old concerto were found in Doncaster and reassembled using musical tongs. Now here are some random facts that you might not know about classical music. It can be used to stop camels from attacking walruses. In an unusual experiment at Chunsford University, a camel was placed next to a walrus. When an attack seemed imminent, bark was played. The camel became drowsy and began to wander around as if thinking about winter evenings. When its thoughts were placed on a digital readout, it was discovered that the camel was perturbed at the lack of feeling in the percussion section. The thoughts of the walrus were too unusual for public consumption, and it remains so at this time and as of now. The first draft of Wagner's Ring Cycle was originally staged in a barrel, which led to complaints from the audience who were denied access to the barrel due to its size. A full account of this can be read in Simon Callow's My Life as an Actor in a Barrel by Simon Callow of the same name. The viola is often used to hammer wooden posts into the ground by musicians doubling as construction workers due to lack of work. The London Symphony Orchestra once became so unwieldy that it imploded, sucking all manner of household items into the centre of the vacuum. Few members survived, and even fewer lived. Offenbach shortened his name to Bach, which he claimed was easier for the audience to remember. For similar reasons, Shostakovich shortened his name to Schozer, and released two concertos aimed at silage manufacturers, stating they were an untapped market. Harold Proudfoot was the first man to play a solo bassoon version of Schubert's unfinished symphony, Up a Chimney. Despite a tremendous fall of soot during the second movement, he carried on, and the subsequent LP, Schubert Live and Up a Chimney, is now an unusual, if muffled, classic. Well, now it's time for our quiz questions quiz, specially written in the key of G for beginners. This week's prize is a selection of books about music, which, if you pull a string, converts into a luxury life raft, ideal for any nautical emergency. Consolation prizes this week include a musical grain of rice, which whistles when you place it in the middle of a country lane. It is difficult to hear the whistling sound due to the small nature of the grain of rice, but it can be amplified using our special array of speakers, available for £9.99 and ninepence from our website, which can be located in a field. Question 1. If a pile of oboes were placed in a sealed container and water was allowed into it, would there be any sound? And if so, would it be audible? Question 2. In 1904, conductor Milton Prowles wrote a piece for violin, piccolo, and a block of granite. Why was the aforementioned block of granite to be played on the roof of a moving vehicle? And what was the name of the driver? A tricky one there. Question 3. Why did the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra once have to wear moon boots? Question 4. When Debussy wrote his famous piece, An Afternoon in the Life of a Gas Stove, why was the gas stovist replaced at the 11th hour and not at the 10th, as previously stated? Question 5. When tuning a piano, can one use a large motor horn as part and parcel of the whole process? And would a stream of molten lava from a nearby volcano hinder the piano tuner? Question 6. When hearing classical music for the first time, eagles often think the post has arrived. Why is this? And to whom should I address further inquiries? And in finality, question 6. Adagio means at a medium pace, largo means to be played by large instruments only, and moderato means to be played with mediocrity. But what does capo a capo mean? And what happens if you play a piece of music without first going to the polar ice cap as required? When you think you know the answers to the questions that I've just read out via my voice, resulting in the questions being heard by ear, put your answers on the table and send it to the usual address, which can be found at the foot of our stairs. Well, now it's time to look at the classical music-based activities going on round the country in Let's Have a Sort of Gander-like. On Monday in Eaton Square, the National Music People Society will be holding a sale of semi-breves. If you have any spare, do take them along, as they will be sold to poverty-stricken composers who live on the breadline and near to the edge of the brink. Tuesday sees the London Community Choir singing traditional sea shanties. To make this a particularly special event, they will be singing while standing in the Thames, and waterproof song sheets will be provided. Snorkels will also be used, but due to the slightly dangerous nature of the event, it will not be taking place. Spectators are advised to go elsewhere. On Wednesday, a coal scuttle will be left in the middle of the road, and accompanying music will be played by the Royal Coal Scuttle Players, who will be taking it in turns to bang the scuttle with a broom, which will apparently cause a pleasingly melodious clanging noise. They will also be hitting a bucket and a small stapling iron, which has been specially invented for the day. Thursday and banjo lovers will be out in force, as today sees the start of the Banjo Symphony, written by someone and played unusually on a tricycle. Questions about the point of this should be addressed to the leader of the free world, who will be there with his advisers. Well, that's it for this week. If you have found the music in this programme too loud, please place your head underwater until further notice. You can also write in for our CD accompanying the programme, which comes complete with an iron bar and hammer, both of which can be used to throw at annoying people that you meet during the course of your day. Incidentally, if you do have trouble with such people, please try to strangle them, so kinder people can win through and make the world a better place. Goodbye.
That was Programme 3 of Things, written and presented by John Dredge, who can be reached at johndredge@hotmail.com.